So I want to welcome in studio this morning Sean Heffron, who is a professor. He's actually the assistant dean. I've got it written down here, the assistant dean for student success in the College of Business at Sacred Heart University. In fact, he has been with the college for 16 years now, and he's also a writer. He's an acclaimed writer. He just published his third book called After the End. So I wanted to welcome Sean in studio this morning, get to know you a little bit, introduce you to the audience, and talk about your work.
Yeah, thank you, Melissa. I appreciate you having me. And I think what you do for the community especially is really, really interesting and important. And hopefully it's rewarding for you, too. You get to meet a lot of cool people and me.
I do, yes. No, I was saying actually right before the show, I envision that your students probably think you're one of the cool, rad, chill professors that they have.
At which point I said, let me just call my wife and say that again, please.
Yeah, exactly.
So she knows, yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, no, I appreciate you listening to the show. I appreciate you taking interest in coming on. Before I dive into your book, I want to talk a little bit about the work that you do at Sacred Heart. You've been there for 16 years. It has grown tremendously. What is your favorite part of being a professor for college students?
Yeah, that's a great question. It's actually what keeps me doing it for 16 years and more. It's between 18 and 21 is when I think, you know, you're becoming who you are. You're forming your own identity. They're very formative years. And I think my favorite part is being a guide for that. It's sort of helping students find their pathway along that. Because in my role, not just inside the classroom, but in my role as like an academic advisor, an assistant dean, I see all of the best students who are really becoming the best versions of themselves through leadership roles and that sort of thing. And I see a lot of the students who are struggling, you know, academically, socially, you know, their parents are involved and that sort of thing. And those are really the ones that at the end of the day, you know, if I get a, hey, thank you, and I couldn't have done this without you sort of thing, like that's, to me, that's education, and that's why I'm there, yeah.
That's amazing. So did you always want to be some sort of a teacher?
No, I didn't. In fact, I wanted to be like you, to be honest with you. When I was in college, I changed my major 4 times, actually.
Oh, wow, yeah.
I started as a double major in mathematics and computer science and immediately realized that was not for me. I'll never forget the first project I had in class was you have to get the computer to say hello when you type in hello. And I'm sitting there, and the kid next to me just goes, okay, so professor, can you help me work on this virtual reality simulator that I've been developing since I'm 7? And I was like,
Nope, not me. Sorry.
And then so I thought maybe I wanted to be like a sports broadcaster. And this was at Ithaca College back in the 90s. And I became a broadcast journalism major, minor in sports information and communication. And same thing, you know, I started doing and learning and, you know, running the boards. And I had 2 radio shows. And on a Friday, I had your morning show. And
so
I had that,
cool.
And it was that part was great. But the sports side of it was, you know, I'm sitting next to people who they could tell you Ty Cobb's batting average every single year he
played.
Bored. And
I wanted to do sports, too. I ended up in news because I was way too bored. I love sports. I'm a huge sports fanatic. I love it. I mean, but I was too bored working in sports. Yeah.
And so I preferred to be the fan instead of making it my job. And then the whole time I was trying to figure out what I wanted to do for a major, I was involved with student government and Hall Association and stuff like that. So my advisor pulled me aside and he said, hey, dummy, didn't you ever think you could do this for, you know, a career? And so that's when it sort of hit me that I could, you know, work in higher ed and work in colleges. And Sacred Heart's been amazing in that, you know, within the first year, they said, hey, you know, you've got these degrees and this experience. Would you mind, you know, we have someone going on sabbatical. Could you teach their class? It was a communications theory class. And I said, absolutely.
Yeah.
And from then on, I've been teaching at least one course every single semester. And they asked me, could you coach a club baseball team? And I said, yes. And, you know, always say yes. And so that led me to the classroom and led me to my role now. Yeah.
That's amazing. So we're talking to Sean Heffron this morning, who's with Sacred Heart University, and I have in my hand a book that you have written and published. This is your third book. Is this part of a series or this just stands alone?
That's a standalone.
Yeah. It's called After the End. And it's funny because my boss handed this to me. So my boss is good friends with Sean and handed me this book and said, you know, have fun. It looks like a really interesting book. And I'm reading it on the back. And at first I'm like, is this real? Could this be real? And then I'm like, wait a minute. I don't remember this ever happening in U.S. history. So it is obviously fiction. But I think this is a really cool concept of a book. Tell people sort of the synopsis, what the purpose of this was, what sort of inspired you to write After the End.
Yeah, absolutely. So the inspiration is actually kind of ridiculous.
I love ridiculous, by the way.
So I'm looking at your face, you've never had a mustache to shave, right? So,
not that anybody knows of. Not that I've told everybody, but now you've ousted me. So yes, maybe three times I've had one. Yes.
Right. So I'll pull back the veil. This part in the middle under your nose is rougher hair, right? And so usually when I start, I'll shave this side and then this side. And I was shaving one day, and I thought how embarrassing it would be if something, like if the house caught fire at that moment, or like I got called away to an emergency, and I had to sort of explain to the responders like why I have a very small mustache under my nose that
right.
looks like a certain,
you know, a certain person who nobody wants to look like. Yeah.
And as I was sitting there thinking, I went, what an interesting concept. Now, not for a book, right, but for a character in a book, like someone who has to sort of go through basically, you know, the apocalypse, trying to explain to everybody
why
he's got
that
little mustache. So that was just the beginning, sort of the inspiration. But the real, sort of the true inspiration, the true story behind the book itself is that it's an allegory. So the story itself is, you know, there's this 500,000 mile long asteroid belt, and I have an awesome astrophysicist friend who works at Sacred Heart, who sort of helped me with all the science behind this.
Love it. That
covers the Earth. As the Earth rotates, it sort of paints the Earth, if you can kind of imagine, just covers the entire Earth. And so the book itself is about the very few people who survived it.
Wow.
And I was never a big fan of the chosen one sort of story. Like the heroes who can save the day. The survivors are just not even just sort of regular people. They're people who are not heroes. They're very obviously not heroes at all. And it sort of follows them through their journey. So it's two storylines. To make it quick, the first storyline follows a NASA researcher who's sort of trapped in the bunker beneath the White House. And he's sort of the reader's lens to what's happening globally.
Okay.
So we know what's going on around the world. So the second storyline is two college students up at Ithaca. And Ithaca is destroyed. And as they sort of try to find, they have no idea that it's taking place all over the world. They're just
right.
trying to find the end. They're trying to get to the end of this.
Yeah.
Whatever destruction
it is.
And they find a lot of death, and they find a lot of, you know, problems, of course. And they discover a couple other survivors along the way. And none of them are your prototypical, you know, survivor. They're all people with issues and problems and
flawed.
And,
yeah.
Yeah. And they're us, you know.
Exactly.
And, you know, I it's not all doom and gloom. You know, I try to, like, I don't know if you ever saw Jim Valvano's speech at the ESPYs right before he passed away, but he said, you know, if you can laugh and cry and think all in one day, you've had a great day.
Mm.
And so the book really just tried to make it, you know, there are some funny parts. You know, there's definitely some parts where some readers have said already, like, you know, I was just bawling. And, yeah, so I mean, that's essentially the two storylines. Obviously, have an intersecting point towards the end, and you know, each character really does represent. I think, you know, we were talking about this, you know, on text yesterday. Each character, I'm not explicit with it. I don't, you know, say it out loud, but each character sort of represents a different characteristic that we need after the end of something, after we've
right.
lost something, and that's
mm-hmm.
sort of the double entendre of after the end. You know, it's after the end of the Earth, but essentially, like, you know, if you've gone through a divorce, if you've lost a parent, you know, if you've had something traumatic happen to you, you know, some people need to just keep going, and no matter what, just keep moving and going, whether you're right or whether you're wrong. And that's the main character. That's Carlos.
Mm-hmm.
You know, some people are inexperienced. They've never experienced it before. They have no idea what to do. You know, that's the guy with the little mustache, you
mm-hmm.
know. There's a character in here who's just guarded and strong, and she won't give up any information. And sometimes we do that. You know, there's anxiety involved. We can be at our worst. And all the people that they meet sort of very, 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 I think, clearly represent
mm-hmm.
those different net characteristics of who we are after we lose something.
So I think I almost drove Sean Heffron right out of here when I said to him that your book sort of reminds me of a couple of different movies. And I would imagine any author doesn't want to hear that, oh, my concept reminds you of something that's already been done. But I've noticed that a lot of movies, maybe not so much books, they focus so much on like the end of the world or like apocalypse and so on and so forth. So when I first saw your book, I was like, oh, I don't know. And if you fall under this category like I do, hold on one second, because what I think makes your book different is that it's just the scenario mm-hmm. that sets the scene. What I love is that your book dives into the different reactions to trauma or difficult times or the unthinkable. And it actually kind of reminds me of like Inside Out from Pixar, which is totally different concept, but like how different emotions work in a human brain. I love this because it also kind of can help people, even if you know how trauma works for yourself, to understand how other people will react. Because we live in a society where we are not open-minded whatsoever to how people respond to different things, to how people will react. And so we judge. We judge before we even have an open mind to go, hey, maybe that's not how I would respond, but that's how they're going to respond. So thank you
for
creating that.
Yeah, you know, the big sort of Michael Bay sexy part, you know, happens at the very beginning, and it's not, that's not the book, you know, it's not
exactly.
The big sort of, it's suspenseful. I think there's definitely heart, but it is character driven, like you mentioned, you know,
yeah.
It really is about the people, because it is really the other people and their stories that sort of get us through the trauma, and that's really what the book is about, you know, almost to the point where, you know, not to give too much away, but, you know, you have people who are wandering in this sort of desert of rock. There's nothing. And it's really the stories that they're telling each other that are keeping them nourished, keeping them going, you know. And, you know, to your point about not understanding other people's point of view, you know, I mentioned that main character, Carlos, just has to keep going. When they meet the woman who has, you know, really, really, you know, severe anxiety, her response to a lot of things is to not move, to not go.
Right.
Like, I can't right now. And he doesn't understand that, but he also needs her, and she plays a very, very pivotal role in what happens, and he doesn't understand it at first.
Yeah.
And it's really, I love that you sort of even glean that just from sort of your tertiary read of it, because that's the most important part. It's listening to other people, understanding their perspectives, but more importantly, you know, how other people are a part of our story.
Mm-hmm. I love that. So tell me, third book published, mm-hmm. very impressive. And I'm curious, like, I know you said that you didn't expect to be a professor, but did you expect to be an author? Because this is very cool. I've always wanted to write a book, but I am terrified to do so because I, first of all, have no idea how to do it. But it just seems like a big journey to write a book and get it published.
You know, it's so funny you mentioned journey. It's like you're sort of looking at my notes. That's exactly what it is. It's a road trip. It's a journey, and it's going to take a long time.
Mm-hmm.
Anybody out there who's interested in publishing, or if you're interested in writing, just kind of understand it's not this sort of, I have an idea, I wrote it down, and the next day I'm published.
Right.
You know, the analogy I like to use is it's a road trip from, you know, New York to California, where if you have certain resources, you know, a family friend of ours married someone whose parents own a publishing company. So her road trip, she's on the Concorde. She's there. Like,
that's great.
She writes something.
You got the Express.
It's published the next day. Most of us don't have that.
Mm-hmm.
And so what I would say in terms of if you're interested in publishing, to me, the process starts with a community of writers. Find a community of writers. And there are lots of them out there. You know, I've been very fortunate that I was in a writing group when I lived in New York City. It was run by a guy, a lot of people actually may know him. His name is Zach Hample. He's sort of a famous, infamous ball hawk. He goes to Major League Baseball stadiums and he catches baseballs. He's got over 10,000, you know.
That's so cool.
Yeah, he's an interesting character, and he has written a lot of books about it. And so when I was in New York City, I joined a writing group with him. And, you know, again, I just made the mistake of saying to somebody, hey, I'm thinking of writing a book. And so once you make that mistake, people are like, how's the book?
Right.
So then you have to finish it. So in terms of the process, start with a group of other writers who can help you through it. Our current writing group, I have, like, there's a playwright, you know, who's written some, you know, off-Broadway plays. We have a songwriter. We have an amazing guy named Christian Heggie who writes stories in verse. He performs them all over the world.
Wow.
And what's great about it is, you know, you share your writing with them and they make you a better writer.
Mm.
And more importantly, it's that network, I think, that then helps you discover different avenues to publish. You know, there's great online resources. There's I was introduced through my writing group to something called authors.net. I think it's authorspublish.net.gov.com, one of those org,
dot
whatever.
Something.
It's a
right.
Dot something. Look it up. Google it. Yeah, it's authorspublish.com, I think. And what's great about it is it's a free online magazine, and they send every month, here are some publishers who are looking for different genres of writing. So
if you write
if you write poetry, if you write short stories, if you write flash fiction, there's always an avenue to just kind of get started.
That's so cool.
And once you get started, it really is, you know, a snowball effect, because you get that positive feedback and, you know, you sort of start to see yourself in your writing. And I think that's the best part.
I love that. Well, I think it would be very neat one day for, you know, maybe one day you see your students who have written books or something. I know it's something that's on, like, my bucket list of life. I don't need to write a bunch. I'm so impressed that you have. And I think Sean in the beginning was like, oh, I have a couple on the shelf. You have a couple on the shelf. Like, oh, my God. But I'd like to write one day. One day I would love to sit down and actually, you know, be like, all right, we're going to go on this journey. Because, yes, there are some people who will say, it took me 15 years to write this. And I'm like, okay. So by the time Chase goes to college, I'll be done. So that's exciting. I think it's amazing. I love the fact that you are bringing this to the classroom. You are now selling this. Where can people find this book?
Right there in your hands.
just hand it out to everybody.
That's
here
right.
You go.
They're going
to
come
it.
See Melissa Sheketoff.
Yeah, right. No, don't, because I want to read it.
You know,
y'all
just,
can't take
just
mine.
Like where you get everything else nowadays, and those blue vans driving around. It's Amazon. I mean, that's you know, not that I'm trying to plug Mr. Bezos or anything. But yeah, I mean, that's the best place to get it. And, you know, there's a lot of other, there's some other venues out there. But yeah, you can get it on Amazon, After the End, Sean Heffron. There's actually a couple different books called After the End, but a lot of them are about romances and that sort of thing. And
got it.
Spoiler alert, there's no real romances in this one. But
that's okay.
But yeah, After the End on Amazon. And I think, you know, if you are interested in it, or if you're interested in any book, really, one of the things that I highly recommend you do is contact the author after you've read it. Ask questions. Tell us how you felt as you were going through. Give us feedback. That really is, I mean, very few of us do this for a living, for money. Like, we do
right.
it because we have a story to tell. And I personally love to hear feedback. You know, what
so
did you
true.
Like? What didn't you like? You know, who did you connect with? What could I have done differently? And more importantly, asking, you know, questions. You know, who is this character based on? And where did you come up with this? That really is the best part of writing a story. So, yeah. So if
I
you do
that,
please reach out to me during or after. Or, you know, if you've got books on your shelves that you're reading right now, look up who the author is. And if they're still alive, definitely contact them, because we love it.
That's so cool. I think I will start doing that. Sean Heffron, thank you so much for coming in studio. And you are welcome back whenever you want to come back.
And if you start writing, when you start writing your book, let me know. I'm happy
when
to
help. I start writing that book. Right now, I'm going to start getting text messages from you. So how's the book going?
Yeah.
How's the book? Now I did it. See, I said I wanted to write
Melissa's
a book.
Melissa's actually writing right now. She's writing something down.
Oh, man. If only I was that talented. I can't do like three things at once. I can't do it. I'm looking at you and talking to you. There's no way I could write at the same time. I'm sorry. Sean, thank you so much.
Thank
I really
you for
appreciate
having
it.
Me.
Absolutely. Thank you. And of course, again, the book is called After the End. It is written by Sean Heffron, spelled Heffron, if you want to go check it out. Welcoming back to the show this morning, Gary Phelan, who is with Mitchell and Sheehan and also is a professor here in Connecticut. Good morning to you, Gary. Welcome back. How are you?
Good morning, Melissa. How are you?
I'm doing fine, thank you. So, Gary, it's interesting. You and I had a conversation a few weeks back, and we were talking about in-office relationships, whether they're appropriate, whether they're not, how do you handle them if you fall in love or you're infatuated with somebody you work with. And then, interestingly enough, a big story nationally came up very recently. And it looked at two anchors who ended up getting into a romantic relationship. This was with ABC News. And so many people are very familiar with the story at this point. What was first your reaction to the story when it came out?
My first reaction is clearly ABC did not listen to our discussion a couple months ago.
Yeah, I guess not.
Because basically, everything we said they should do, they didn't do, as well as the two individuals, T.J. Holmes and Amy Robach, didn't do what we said they should do. So kind of a good example of what not to do is how this matter's been handled.
I mean, for people who are not familiar, these are, again, two pretty renowned anchors. I think if you're not familiar with their names, as soon as you see them, you'll go, oh, yeah, no, I know them. In fact, I don't know. I think you should probably know their names as well. But anyways, it was reported that they were romantically involved and they totally admitted it. Like they came right out and said, yep. Like that's what's been going on. But if people aren't familiar with the story and sort of how ABC responded to it, could you get people up to speed where we're at with this?
Sure. What happened is two of the host of Good Morning America, Amy Robach, T.J. Holmes, a story broke, and I think it was the Daily Mail, a UK, that had pictures of them and on trips and so what they were having an affair and they acknowledged it. Now importantly, they had not disclosed anything to ABC. So ABC, Good Morning America colleagues, completely caught off guard by it. They knew they were friends, but they also, you know, would post pictures of them with their spouses on social media. They apparently ran a marathon together. So the controversy was a lot of it initially was, you know, is there anything wrong with this? And so certainly it's something that, you know, kicked up a storm in the media, but, you know, from a practical standpoint, the first question was, did ABC, did they have a policy that prohibited this, that provided some sort of guidance? And they apparently didn't.
I was going to say, according to reports, it did not violate any company policy, which I think is really interesting.
Yeah, and it, you know, it's kind of an illustration. I've always thought this, you know, just because an organization is large and you think they're very sophisticated, you know, they still make mistakes. And not having something like this, which happens, I mean, certainly this is something in the human resources arena. Many employers have policies. Mm-hmm. They don't prohibit it. They're recognizing that, that, you know, it's human nature. You can't necessarily control human nature with a policy, but you can have certain requirements, one of which is where it often is a problem is where it's a subordinate employee at a, who they report to, you know, where there's a power imbalance. That wasn't the case here. But also just to require if something is – if a relationship develops – to require the parties to disclose. And so that's apparently why at this point they've both they're host a GMA show at 1 p.m. They've been taken off the air. And part of the reason why, even though apparently, you know, the belief was, boy, the ratings would go up, was because staffers at the show were very upset. Now, keep in mind, this is, you know, as ABC is often referred to as the Disney Network. So a relationship that essentially one is just got separated or divorced, one is still married. It's not good for the brand.
Mm-hmm.
And part of it again was staffers being upset, and part of why they've been removed. And right now, it's not clear what's going to happen with them.
I mean, I think you bring up a couple of good points. We're talking to Gary Phelan this morning with Mitchell and Sheehan. And when you look at this story, like you said, I'm glad you brought up the Disney part. I am a little shocked when you look at a major network like ABC. Sure, I understand that mistakes happen. Absolutely. We're all human, no question. But I mean, to this extent where you don't have a policy in place where you cannot have it, you know, relationships forming through work, or if you're going to, you need to have some kind of open communication with your team. Because again, the problem with this is that, you know, that's why the staff is upset. You've got a trickle effect. You've got people now who know your brand, whether they watch the news or they don't, or they watch Good Morning America, they know Disney. I can tell you right now, they know Disney. And I mean, this topic even came up when I was in Walt Disney World this past weekend. This topic came up like, you work in the media, and it's you know, it's uncomfortable. And so I understand why they've been taken off, despite the fact that really this came down to ABC not having a policy in place. But, you know, when you look at just regular companies that are not maybe as big as ABC, Gary, what do you suggest if you're a company, you know, if you're an employer and maybe you don't have this all buttoned up, or you have strong feelings, or you feel that this would really not look great for your company, but you don't have something in writing right now, what should they be doing? I mean, should they consult a lawyer right now to say, hey, we need to put this policy in place, we need to sit down with our employees? Like, what should companies be modeling to avoid something like this?
I think that is a good idea to, you know, to have a policy, whether or not, you know, they bring in a lawyer to advise them on it. But in part, really, the two things, to simplify it as much as possible. One is just to prohibit relationships develop, you know, where it's between, you know, two people who report to each other. And, you know, sometimes one of them may have to go. But number one, so that's part of what the policy would address. The second is to require the two individuals to disclose it to management, because it isn't just, you know, so that we know about it, so we're not blindsided, as was the case here. But the practical reality is most relationships end, and sometimes they don't end bad, or sometimes they end badly. And sometimes, you know, it ends up with one not being happy about it, that can sort of metastasize into a sexual harassment claim or retaliation against the person who has, you know, who somehow ended the relationship. So, you know, whereas if you have the information up front, you talk about it, you talk about the ramifications, you make sure they're not, you know, and even if they were reporting to each other, perhaps change the nature of their jobs so that they're not reporting to each other. So it's, you know, it's a problem that's solvable, but it's not solvable by assuming it's never going to be a problem.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Gary Phelan, always appreciate getting your perspective on these topics. Thank you so much for calling in. And if I don't talk to you beforehand, have a Merry Christmas.
Oh, thanks, Melissa. Merry Christmas to you as well.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Gary Phelan here from Mitchell and Sheehan on WICC.
Here comes Santa Claus, here comes Santa Claus, right down Santa Claus Lane. Pigs in a blitzin' and all his reindeer pulling on the rain. Bells are ringing, children singing, all is merry and bright.
Hang your stockings and say your prayers,
cause Santa Claus comes tonight.
Oh my goodness. Chris Williams, that might be my favorite version. I love this version of it. This is from The Year Without a Santa Claus. It's so, so good. Oh, I love that version. And yes, Santa Claus is actually going to be here in just a little more than a week. I can't believe it, Santa. Are you ready? Ho, ho, ho. Good morning.
Good morning. Ho, 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 Melissa.
I can't believe it, Santa. You're going to be here so soon. So many people this week have specifically said to me, I can't believe Christmas is next week. Can you believe it?
It's coming fast.
It really is. It's coming up. Oh, my goodness. Are you ready? Do you feel like you're ready? Do you guys have like a Super Bowl push where you're like, all right, we just got to get it all done? Or do you feel like you kind of work throughout the year so you're not as stressed?
Oh, no. We work throughout the year so that it doesn't get frazzled. There's always some surprises, but we make it.
Yeah, you make it work. I love it. Well, Santa, I'm going to get right into it today because we have so many questions for you. This segment has become so popular, which warms my heart. I absolutely love it. So let's get things started. This is I love this question because, you know, sometimes we're so focused on the Christmas stuff that we don't focus on your personal life. Quinn asked this question. Santa, do you like peanut butter?
I love peanut butter.
You do?
I do. Yeah, it gives me the necessary protein when I'm skipping meals.
Ooh, I love
that. It's hard to live on just chocolate chip cookies.
I think that's maybe why Quinn was asking that question, because we always see, you know, in the news and everything and on TV and in movies that you just like cookies and milk. Is that really your favorite food, cookies and milk, or is there something else that we just don't know?
Well, that's my favorite treat. And, of course, I overindulge on the week before Christmas.
I would imagine. And honestly, I give you a pass on that, Santa. Where all the work that you're doing, you could have as many cookies as you want. It's funny because for people who've watched the movie Elf, of course, I've gotten this question before as well. It wasn't on my list, Santa, but I'll ask you. You know, Buddy the Elf, he'll add, he says that there are it's the syrup, it's the candies, candy cane, and candy corn. Do you agree with that, that you've got to have that? That's like the main ingredients. That's for the elves, though, I know. That's like what they live by. But does Santa live by that as well?
I do not. No.
You do not?
Not at all.
No. I mean, the elves need the energy. You know, they need the energy to work crazy hours.
That makes sense. That's correct. There's the sweets.
There you go. I like it. Here's a question from Callie this morning. It's a two-parter. Hey, Santa, how do you get down the chimney?
Everything is magic. I come down the chimney by magic. I'm able to, if there's no chimney available, then I have the ability to come to a door, open it, and walk through.
Oh, wow. That's amazing. And it was funny because I sometimes will read the questions from the week that I get to my son, Chase. And this was a question from Chase. You know, he said, Santa, if you have a dog, and of course he's talking about Trusty. You know Trusty. You run into him every year, Santa. But he said, if you have a dog who doesn't really like people or anybody coming in the house, how do you handle that? How do you handle a dog who might be a little unfriendly with other people?
Well, see, I'm not like other people. I have this aura around me that animals love me no matter what animals they are, like the reindeer and when I'm walking through forests and things, because I am everywhere. Mm. So animals, for the most part, because I smell like cookies, for the most part, just stay away from me.
Interesting. It is funny because every single year, when we've had Trusty for 6 years, I've kind of wondered the same thing. I said to Chase, you know, I'll ask Santa about that when he's on Friday, because I am surprised. He's always been good with you. He doesn't do anything to you.
And it's the special dog biscuits that I carry.
Oh! Santa, you are a clever one. We are talking to the Santa Claus this morning here on WICC, taking children's questions this morning. And let's see, I've got a question from Joey this morning. Santa, do you ever want presents?
No, I don't, Joey. You know, my presents are the fact of the smiles on your faces in the morning or when I see you. Those are the best presents in the world for Santa.
Oh, that's so nice, Santa. I love that. And good question, Joey. Thank you for sending that in. Eric asked this question. Santa, what if you're somebody who's a really nice person, but maybe you do naughty things? Uh-oh, is Eric on your potentially naughty list this year, Santa? What do you do when you've got someone who's not perfectly nice but isn't considered like a naughty or a bad child?
Oh, well, you know, we address that, and we mold and help you along so that you don't do the naughty things. Everybody at some stage maybe does something that's a little naughty, and then we just kind of in the back of their mind bring it to their attention that, come on, you know better, you do better.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I like that. And we've got some questions from Luke and his siblings this morning. First question, Santa, how do you make it to everyone's house in just one night?
Well, obviously, I control time.
Oh,
so
wow.
I control time for where I am in space and time. So it's, you don't even see it, which is half the reason you don't see me when I'm delivering on Christmas Eve.
Wow, that's incredible. Where'd you get that? I want that. Yeah. How do I slow down time so my son doesn't keep growing up? That's incredible,
yeah,
Santa.
Yeah, that's it. It's a very closely guarded secret.
Oh, I would think so. Absolutely, Santa. Some more questions from Luke and his siblings. How do all the presents fit in your sleigh?
Well, because the basis of a lot of what I do is magic, those presents are so tiny when they go into my special bag, and then when I get them down into the house, otherwise how would I fit them down the chimney or through the door or anything else? And then when I get them in the house, they grow right up into the full size.
That's amazing. I'm telling you, kiddos, you guys are getting a great opportunity to get the inside scoop on Santa. Don't any of you try this at home, because Santa's got a lot of magic on his side. We're talking to the Santa Claus, taking your questions this morning. A lot of kiddos sending in questions this year for Santa, and they're so precious. Let's see. Another one from Luke and his siblings had a lot of questions. So here's another one. What does Santa do to make sure his sleigh doesn't break since it's so heavy? You've got the presents and the reindeer. How do you make sure that everything stays together, nothing breaks?
Well, number one, it's bigger than what you think it is, and it's built very, very sturdy using, you know how you see a barn that's out there, and that barn is probably 300-400 years old, and it's still standing and intact, and everything fits? Well, my sleigh is built in a similar way.
Oh, interesting. Okay. So it's nothing that we could probably build here. It sounds like it's a very complicated. It seems like it was built a firm way, but I wouldn't know how to make that. I wouldn't know how to do that.
No, I have the elves, and the elves take care of everything.
True.
And make sure that everything is updated and together and not broken.
Yeah, that's very true. And then a couple of questions from Emma and Connor this morning. So cute. Siblings in Fairfield. They asked, what time do you leave the North Pole in order to deliver all of your presents?
Well, see, once again, time has no bearing because I control time. So I leave on Christmas Eve and I come back the beginning of Christmas Day.
That's amazing.
In your time.
Okay.
In my time, it's a little bit longer.
I gotcha. Yeah, that makes sense. Okay, that's fair. So it seems like, you probably have a nice meal. You sit down, you talk to Mrs. Claus, and then you head out the door to go to work. It sounds like that.
That's it.
All right. Last question for you, Santa Claus, this week. And, of course, we'll take more questions for next week when Santa comes on right before Christmas. Santa, what do the reindeer do when they're not working? Other than Christmas Eve, what do they do?
Well, as you see on some of the programs and the movies and things, the reindeer love to have fun. And so they frolic and play, and they keep themselves in good shape, and they eat well, and they keep exercising so that they are able to pull my sleigh.
Yeah, exactly. They've got to stay in shape. It's like an athlete, right? It's like a five-star athlete. They've got a lot of work to do that one day a year. I like that.
And there's a herd. There's not just Dasher, Dancer, Prancer, Vixen, Comet, Cupid, Donder, and Blitzen, and Rudolph for rainy days. There's others up there, too, just in case.
Yeah, you never know. Hey, you know what? It's like the morning show. Gosh knows, if I get sick, luckily we've got Paul Pacelli, who I hope is on your good list this year, to fill in for me.
Let me see. Let me look it up.
Check if Paul Pacelli is on your list. He might be teetering.
he's a little bit of teetering, but he's more towards the good list.
I like it, Santa. Well, thank you so much for always stopping by during the month of December and taking our questions. We've got another Friday coming up right before Christmas where we'll have more questions for you.
My pleasure, Melissa. You have a wonderful week.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Santa Claus. Really appreciate it. Oh, my goodness. And I did have another question for you, Santa Claus, really quickly. Chris Williams, my producer, asked last week, do you back in your sleigh or do you pull in face first since it's not a car? What do you prefer? What's easy for parking?
Well, obviously, we go forwards. You know,
go forwards. Come on now. There are no reverse cameras.
With the barn, we have two openings. You come in and go through. So,
there you go, Chris. You know. Now he feels better. Now he knows. All right, there you go. Santa Claus is coming to town, and I'm so glad he stopped at WICC first. Thank you so much, Santa.
Oh, you're very welcome. Have a wonderful week.
You too. Thanks, Santa. We'll see you next week right here on WICC.